Roundtable Podcasts, underwritten by Proctors, the Capital Region's premier performing arts center featuring the best in entertainment from Broadway and around the globe. Proctors.org.
I'm going to say a single word to you, Richie Neal, and then you tell me what you think. Guess what that word is?
Syria.
Right. That's the word. So just so our listeners know, we speak the morning of the president's speech. So give us a little idea as what do you make?
Well, there's always a page from the old playbook that presidents use, and it goes like this. Tell them what you're going to tell them, and then tell them what you told them. And I think that what we've seen now for the last 10 days leading up to the president's address to the nation, and then the subsequent spin that will take place over the next few days from supporters and opponents will pretty much encapsulate the argument. There have been a series of, I think, very important briefings. I've had a chance to hear from the Secretary of State, John Kerry. Secretary of Defense Hagel has been there. Susan Rice, Jim Clapper, the President's National Security Advisors, and the head of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, General Dempsey. And in these conversations, they have certainly made a case for the use of chemical weapons by Assad. At the same time, they've been mindful of the rollout on the argument and how to handle it. They've addressed some of the nuance, and the president now, I think, will make the case for prosecution to the American people.
Obviously, he can't afford to let up, because if he does, then, as my mom used to say, Assad may take advantage.
Well, one of the things that I've noticed in the conversation that has occurred from the administration has been the suggestion that now, even if the Russian proposal is to have legs, it still is important to keep the president's hand free to make a judgment. And while I've been skeptical of some of the arguments that have been made by the administration, I think most of us have been pretty careful not to do anything at this juncture that would disturb the opportunity for an amicable solution.
Is it your impression, as it is mine, that there are always extra official contacts, for example, between us and the Russians during all of this? You see Kerry make an offhand remark about this, but of course it's not going to happen. Then it happens. One has the impression, though, that the various diplomats may be in touch with each other.
The diplomatic corps uses a variety of entreaties and opportunities to make contact. In our lifetime, there's probably no better evidence of that than Richard Nixon's foray into China. That was done despite the fact that our public position was very contrary to our private position. And I think here you're seeing once again this opportunity, even though the president did not hold the summit that he was to hold with Putin, he nonetheless did not let the opportunity go by the wayside. And he took full advantage of it once again to make his argument to Putin personally. So I think in those instances, you can see that there is, of course, a casual conversation. And then you move to a more diplomatic stage. I think one of the items that the administration has been suggesting is that not to be misled by this preemptive effort by the Soviets or the Russians at the moment to make this argument.
I mean, from a political standpoint, an electoral standpoint, a popularity standpoint, have you ever seen a guy's fortunes reverse the way Obama's has based on this potential, solution, which is that he knew all along that he had to threaten in order to get some kind of resolution?
Well, that's conceivable. And at the same time, I must tell you that the other item that I think changed this dynamic substantially was David Cameron's failure to secure support for his initiative in the House of Commons. The watching and listening to that debate in Commons was fascinating to me because originally Ed Miliband, the leader of the Labor Party, he more or less embraced the Cameron position. Nick Clegg, his partner in government from the Liberal Party, did the same. And then to lose that vote by 15 was, I think, an issue that resonated across the Atlantic to Washington, and I think that's when the president decided that he would seek congressional approval, not incidentally suggesting that Congress would hold the position of veto, because he has also held out the possibility, even though I think it's fairly remote, that he would conceivably go it alone. But the unilateral action here is the one that I think the president's tried to be mindful of, and putting together multilateral action, I think, is something clearly that he has sought.
Now, your Republican colleagues in the House, it's just interesting stuff. I would have no doubt that if George Bush were the president and he said, as he did, let's go in, let's attack, let's use ground troops, the Republicans as one would have been behind him. But the fact that they haven't been here and that they've been trying to take some shots at Obama, what does that make them look like?
Well, I think your perception is correct, and it's entirely accurate, and I've had a chance to witness it during some of the briefings. And what I'm struck by is, you know, the framers of our constitutional system established that Congress is the first branch of government for good reason, and that was to keep a check on the executive. And one of the things that will remain with me for the rest of my days is how feckless the Republican Congress was at any and every admonition from George Bush's White House. And I watched them roll over time and again on issues like the line item veto, the tax cuts, the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan, the request for more money time and again, even though the money was kept off budget so that it would masquerade the true cost of the wars. I think all of those items meant that the Republican Congress during 6 of the 8 years that George Bush was president, they clearly abrogated their responsibility to provide oversight. There is a good reason in our constitutional system for the legislative branch of government to provide oversight as it relates to the executive. And I think that you're witnessing here a determination by many Republicans not to hear what Barack Obama has to say. And at the same time, the Democratic Party has always been much more diverse in its makeup, and it comes from broader regions of the country. And the result is that from Vietnam forward, the Democratic Party has been much more difficult in terms of uniting around a common principle of foreign policy.
How would you say John Kerry has done?
Well, I think he's been very good in terms of performing the Secretary of State's role. I must tell you, having known John for the better part of my entire career, I also think that he was tailor-made for this position. I think diplomacy has always been a very important consideration for him. And as I've witnessed his presentations inside of the briefings, I think that he's done a very, very good job. And not to miss the point that there are very few things that he would say or do that had not been encouraged by the White House.
So you don't think there's a competition for power between the president and Kerry?
I don't think that that would happen. I think that everybody understands that the president's elected and the Secretary of State is appointed.
I want to ask you something. I got 1 or 2 minutes here. There's a huge fight going on for who gets to have the gambling casino over in your area. What do you make of that mess?
Well, there have been a series of referendum questions, and it all points to a casino coming to the western part of the state, largely because of the competition that's existed. You can see that the bidding process has certainly been upped by the prospective franchise holders, and the communities have entered into agreements with them, at least on a tentative basis. And I think once Governor Patrick announced that he was supportive of a casino prospect, I think it changed the entire debate. So there is no doubt in my mind there will be one casino in western Massachusetts.
But you're not willing to offer a prediction as to where it
will be? No, not really, because I do think it's a land use question. It's a question that is resolved by local government. There's no role for a member of Congress here, and we certainly have our plate full at the time.
It's always great to hear from our friend Richie Neal from the Massachusetts 1st District, where I vote, in office since 1989, and one of the most interesting guys that I have ever been able to interview on the radio. Thank you, Richie.
Thank you, Alan.
And when we come back the next time, well, we're going to ask you some other stuff.
Look forward to it.